This is Common Ground Radio, a conversation about local food and organic agriculture brought to you by the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association on Community Radio WERU 89.9 FM Blue Hill. I'm your host, Holly Cederholm, and I have exciting news. Not one, not two, but three new co-hosts will be joining me on Common Ground Radio to explore Maine's food system. And today, they're all here for a special get-to-know-you conversation with backgrounds in organic agriculture, gardening with native plants, community organizing, and more. These new hosts will bring a diversity of perspectives to our monthly conversations. Our new co-hosts of Common Ground Radio are Sarah Alexander, Executive Director of the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. Sarah, thanks for being here.
I'm really excited to join as a co-host.
Seth Kreck of Crystal Spring Farm in Brunswick, Maine. Seth also serves as treasurer on MOFCA's board. Seth, thanks for joining us.
It's really great to be here. Thank you.
And last but not least, Yvonne Vasquez, the owner and grower at Bass Rouge Farm and Forge, a native plant nursery in Orono, Maine. Yvonne is the vice president of MOFCA's board of directors. Yvonne, welcome to Common Ground Radio.
Absolutely thrilled to be here. Thank you.
So Sarah, to start, can you tell us a little about your background related to local food and farming or gardening and how that connects you to MOFCA in your role as executive director?
Well, when I think about why I got interested in food, my family generations are pretty close together. And so I was very fortunate to spend a lot of time with my great grandmothers. And they became parents during the Depression. And so they had this value around food, growing your own food, food preservation. I think, you know, having victory gardens. And even though one of my great grandmothers lived in a urban setting, her yard, the perimeter of the yard, was filled with her vegetable gardens. And the center of the yard had two apple trees, a grapevine, and many, many perennial plants. And so growing up, I spent a lot of time in her yard, but also helping her put up that food, learning how to can, learning how to make things. And that's my, you know, sort of foundation of how I think I became interested in food. When I went off to college, as I started to learn more about the food system, I realized that what I grew up around, which was corn and soybean fields in Ohio and factory farms, were really harmful for our environment, our health, our communities, and started to look for alternatives. And thankfully, there were so many alternatives out there that I started to learn about. And that really led me to working in traditional food systems restoration up in Minnesota on the White Earth Reservation and working with the White Earth Land Recovery Project. And the trajectory has continued since there. I've worked for five different food and agriculture focused nonprofits. And now I've been at MOFCA for 8 years as the executive director. And I'm so passionate about our mission to support farmers, to empower people to feed their communities, feed their neighbors, and hopefully feed themselves as well with gardens and perennial food forests and all of the wonderful things that folks can learn if they're engaged with MOFCA. And I also really feel strongly with my community organizing background about advocacy and how we can advocate for an organic future. I'm excited to be here co-hosting, and I'm just thrilled to continue my work at MOFCA.
You definitely bring a lot of different threads in food and agriculture into not only your role at MOFCA, but we're excited to have you as a host. And I'm really interested to hear about why you want to join us on the airwaves and what are some of the conversations you're looking forward to having in this space.
Well, I'm really fortunate in my role as executive director at MOFCA to get to connect with so many people in our community, and everybody has a story. So when I get to go out and visit with a farm and the farmers there, they've got stories about what they're doing, why they're doing it, what's working, what's not working. And I want to share those with folks. There's so much to share about our food system, about how we can change our food system, how we can support the really wonderful things that are happening in our food system. And so I'm really hoping that I can take those stories that I get to hear every day and bring those forward for our audience and our community.
Is there any one thing, or maybe more than one thing, you want to share with the listening audience about your experience in more detail? You gave us a nice overview of your background and what led you to Mofka and how you're excited about sharing these stories on the airwaves. But is there like a passion topic or something else you want folks to know about you?
Well, I consider myself to be a novice gardener, even though I've been doing it for a while. I am always trying new things, and there's always so much to learn. So, for example, this year I'm starting grapevines in my yard from cuttings, dormant cuttings from a neighbor. I'm starting mushroom logs and some other things. And so there's always a next thing to try. And I'm learning myself as we go along, and I feel like I'm going to learn as much from interviewing our guests as our audience is going to learn.
Those grapevines kind of bring it back full circle to what your grandmother has bestowed upon you. As you're exploring as a so-called novice gardener, are there certain resources within your community or different organizations that you're turning to learn and build upon this base knowledge that you already have?
The good news is that Mofka has so many resources, and I feel really fortunate to have the inside scoop on things like our planting calendar. I live by the planting calendar. I have it printed out. I write notes on it every year of when I'm planting things. I actually also help manage my son's elementary school garden. And so I introduced all of the kids in the garden club to the calendar, and they took it home. And I heard some wonderful stories about how their families are using it now. And what a good lesson to learn of, when you need to start things, and really working with the kids too on how we don't want to start the warm season stuff too early because we won't be able to plant it out, that kind of thing.
Thanks so much for sharing about those resources and that perspective. And now, Sarah, I'm going to pass the mic to you, so to speak.
Great. Thank you, Holly. I am going to ask some questions of Yvonne or Ivy. Ivy, I'm so excited to be here in conversation with you. And I'm hoping that you can just start by sharing a little bit about your first experiences with gardening and farming and how those inspired you on your journey.
I started gardening because of the beauty that surrounds us here in Maine and wanting to learn more about how I could be part of it rather than being apart from it. So not just gardening for myself, but also giving back something ecologically to what surrounds me. So whether it's pollinators or the streams and the rivers and the lakes, and being very conscientious about how I approach things. But one of the first things that I would say appealed to me the most was attending my first ever Common Ground Fair, which was about 35 years ago. So when it was still at the Windsor Fairgrounds. And I was absolutely amazed and mesmerized and enthralled by everything that I saw at the fair, from people being just so generous and kind and offering to answer questions or demonstrate something that they did. That was so exciting, and it just really fed that want to be more and to understand more and to learn more about gardening and farming. So many years later, after trial and error and learning on my own as a gardener, I did become a master gardener volunteer. I also became a registered Maine guide because, again, having that understanding, that basic foundational understanding of how our ecosystems work together, is so crucial. That led to moving elsewhere. My husband wanted to pursue a degree at the University of Maine, and so we purchased a home in Orono, and it became a homestead. And that homestead then led actually to farming, a small scale farm, and now to the native plant nursery. So it's been about a 35-year journey to get to this point. And it's one of the things that I also encourage many of my students, the gardening classes, I let them know that it may take a while, but you learn along the way. As you were speaking earlier, you're constantly learning, you're constantly understanding and wanting to do more, and wanting to do more even outside of the garden, such as the jellies and jams that you spoke of. And the more we learn, quite honestly, the better we become. I always say that I am the best version of myself after spending time with my native plants. So to me, it's all part of that very symbiotic growth with our gardens.
Yeah, absolutely. I had no idea that you really got started with that inspiration from the Common Ground Country Fair. I hear many people when I'm out in the community, their stories about their first fair and how it inspired them. And it's just so heartening to hear that that was part of your journey as well. I'm curious to hear more about how you decided to focus your farm on the native plant nursery.
That was an interesting journey in itself. And it actually had a great deal to do with the fact that my husband went back to school. We had one vehicle between us. My youngest son was still at home and he was at school full time. And I am sitting here by myself. And as I'm sitting here by myself, I decided to start walking around and just trying to learn about the plants that surround me in this beautiful little plot. And the more I saw, the more I learned, the more I wanted to do. So I ended up cataloging about 450 different native plants that grow here. And this is before the internet became the research base that it is now. But I went to the library and I tried to find as much information as I could about the plants that I saw growing around me and trying to understand sort of that. Again, that symbiotic relationship within the ecosystem. Why is that plant growing next to that shrub? Why is that shrub growing next to that tree? And so on and so on. And then understanding or trying to understand better the interaction between wildlife and all of the vegetation around me, and trying to understand how the frogs enjoy the sedges that grow inside the frog pond that occurs naturally, or to watch the birds eating from the American plum tree, and really getting into that basic understanding. To me, that's the foundational piece. If you understand, then you can learn. And if you can learn, then you can do so much more with the native plants. And we're so fortunate to live in such a beautiful place where native plants are all around us. And if we understand again that ecological symbiosis, I think we're that much further along. And that's how I got started with native plants.
You are listening to Common Ground Radio. I'm Holly Cederholm, and on today's show, I'm chatting with our three new co-hosts, Sarah Alexander, Seth Kreck, and Yvonne Vasquez. Common Ground Radio can be heard on the second Thursday of each month at 4 p.m. on 89.9 FM and at weru.org. It is brought to you by the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association.
You must interact with many people who are interested in native plants. I think this has been a really popular topic that we've seen with our workshops at MOFCA. More and more people are getting really interested as we learn more about pollinators and ecosystem benefits and all of the interactions. And so when people come to you and they're just wanting to get started with native plants, do you have a recommendation for folks on where they should get started?
Absolutely. And again, understanding that's sort of a common theme, a common thread throughout everything that I speak about and teach. If you understand your local soil conditions, if you understand your sun conditions, if you know what is already growing around you, that actually goes quite far in helping you determine which plants will do well. For instance, if you happen to have very sandy conditions, you mentioned those earlier. One of the things that you would look at are things such as the beach plums, Lobelia syphilitica, which is a great blue lobelia. You may want to look at Pearly Everlasting. Those are plants that do very well in this dry, sandy border conditions. So if I'm speaking to someone and they come up to me and say, I'd like to grow native plants, first question I ask them is, what kind of trees or shrubs grow around your home? And in stating that, they've already let me know whether they have moist conditions, whether they have very dry conditions. There's a lot of information around us already. And so what I try to help folks understand is what can the land tell you about what plants will do well for you there?
Well, I'm taking notes, Ivy, on what I'm gonna take away and try to grow in my yard. And there's so much more to dive into here, but now I'm gonna hand it over to you to interview Holly.
Thank you. Holly, what are you most excited about this upcoming growing season.
Well, you said the Common Ground Fair, and I was just excited to weigh in on the conversation. You said that you got connected through the fair, and Sarah mentioned that that's kind of a gateway for a lot of people. And this September, MOFCA is actually hosting the 50th annual Common Ground Country Fair. You know, it's always 3 days, but this one is a very special 3 days. So, in addition to working behind the scenes of the fair in my communications role at MOFCA, it's really been such a huge part of my life. Once upon a time, I was a student at Unity College in Unity, Maine, and attending the fair was actually an assignment for a new student orientation course called the Unity Experience. So each and every student enrolled at Unity College had to, at one point, sign up for a 4-hour volunteer shift at the fair. And one thing that makes this event super unique for folks that are not aware is that it's volunteer powered. So there's thousands of people coming together to make it happen. And it was really rewarding and honestly really transformative to be welcomed into that community of people committed to environmental stewardship and land-based lifestyles and right livelihood. And I spent my 4 hours sorting, recycling, and compost. It's not the most glamorous thing, but it was amazing. And I got my free admission to the fair and I earned my volunteer t-shirt. And then I attended workshops and demonstrations, and I oogled all the organic produce in the exhibition hall, and I danced to fiddle music. And then I came back and I volunteered the next year, and I volunteered the next year. And then in between, I participated in MOFCA programs for beginning farmers, including the apprenticeship program and the journeyperson program. I actually lived on MOFCA's campus for 2 years as the farmer in residence while I fledged my own farm business. And now I work for MOFCA. So, as you can see, the Unity experience worked for me. But really, the Common Ground Country Fair is unlike any other agricultural fair that I've been to. At each entrance, there's a farmer's market. All the food vendors, whether they're making fried shiitake mushrooms or wood-fired pizza or burgers and French fries, they're prioritizing local and organic ingredients. And there's hundreds of educational workshops related to organic growing and sustainable living. And there's sheepdog demonstrations, and I already mentioned the dancing. So I'm really pumped up for this 50th annual event. And what's even more exciting is that it's not limited to the 3 days in September. So the festivities are happening starting in June with a special art exhibit at the State House in Augusta. So each year of the fair, there's a poster contest that Maine artists and MOFCA members submit to, and then there's a democratic process in which a design is selected. So each fair has a representative design, and this art exhibit features all 50 Common Ground Country Fair posters, and that's really a big deal because it's never happened before. We've never had them all in one place. This June through August, that'll be happening in Augusta, and then it'll move to Waterville Creates in Waterville for the month of September. And in Waterville, the exhibition is going to kick off with a reception on the first Friday of September with a block party. And that should be really fun.
That's wonderful. And I do have another question that's going to tie into the Common Ground Country Fair, because you're also the editor of the MOFNG magazine, which is the quarterly magazine that MOFCA publishes. So what changes for the 50th Common Ground Fair with what you do at MOFCA? I'm assuming there's going to be quite a lot more that's going to go into that particular magazine.
Yeah, so for folks who might be unfamiliar with the publication, it's over 50 years old, and we recently transitioned it into a magazine format. So it's a full color 68-page magazine, and it has regular sections, including features on organic farms and reference articles. Like for the summer issue, there's a great article on how to carve a wooden spoon and how to barter with your neighbors. And then there's also regular columns from MOFCA staff on things like crops and livestock and policy. And we're taking these regular segments and putting a spin on it to really celebrate and highlight the 50th annual event this year. So I'm not going to do any spoilers. So you'll have to read the magazine when it launches in September, but we will have some great features that dive into the history and the behind the scenes of the fair.
Thank you so much, Holly.
And now I'm going to pass it to Sarah to ask Seth a few questions.
Seth, we're really excited to have you joining as a co-host. And I think it would be great to just get started with you sharing a little bit more about what inspired you to get into farming and how Mofka has been a part of your journey.
Well, I think the long and the short of it is that I started my young life out as an artist and really like the work of trying to solve a problem through something physical. In my mid-20s, I got a chance to spend a summer on a farm and realized that the processes of solving problems on a farm were very similar to creating art. And so I transitioned over and put my energy into that and have just never really stopped. It's just an endless pool of possibility. So that's why I really enjoy it and keep doing it day after day. My connection to Mofka falls through that same vein in that it's a really tight group community of people that are all engaged in this same problem-solving quest of how do we create community, how do we grow food for each other and make each other healthy and happy and make the world a little better place. And so I think that's really the connection. I actually spent a little time looking around the country of places that I might want to land as a farmer and kept being drawn back to Maine. So it has a lot to do with the community that Mofka has built around agriculture.
I talked to so many people in our community that mark how they got involved with Mofka or what was the first thing they attended. For a lot of people, that was the Common Ground Country Fair, as we heard about earlier. But I'm curious, what was the first way that you interacted with Mofka?
I was actually farming in Western Massachusetts and talked to some folks who had been farming in Western Mass but had moved up to Maine and were just gushing about the community that they'd found there and the opportunities that were happening. And Mofka kept being a kind of a foundational part of all of these conversations that I started having about Maine and agriculture. This really interesting group of the older back to the land generation and this new, at that time, younger generation, now very much middle-aged generation that I'm in, that was taking up the reins. And there was a real energy there and a cooperation. Mofka kept rising to the top as a part of this whole movement.
So I was just eating your wild blueberries this morning on my oatmeal for breakfast, and I'm sure folks would love to hear a little bit more about what does the farm look like today and what are you growing?
We, for most of the time here, were a highly diversified CSA operation. We're growing mixed vegetables on a little under 20 acres. And around 10 years ago, we're offered the chance to care for and harvest wild blueberries on a contiguous piece of property. And started doing that. And in the process of doing that, realized that we needed to scale back the complexity of our vegetable operation. And so, over the last 10 years, we've transferred from a highly diversified vegetable operation to growing wild blueberries and just a handful of crops for wholesale. And so, that's Brussels sprouts, carrots, some specialty peppers, and recently some small grains that we have mixed into our rotation, both as a cash crop and as a cover crop.
So, Seth, you and I have had a chance to work together on quite a few things, it feels like, over the last few years, really addressing some of the challenges that farmers have been facing from changes in federal programs and payments. One of my favorite memories of our work together last year was the tractor brigade and you leaving on your tractor at, I don't know, 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning to drive
Something
to
like that. Yep.
Augusta. And more recently, we've been working on some issues with Hannaford stocking local carrots and local organic produce. And I would love to just hear more from you. What do you think are some of the biggest challenges that farms are facing right now, or that you feel like you're facing? And what are you thinking about in terms of what we can do about those things?
It's a big question here in Maine, and partly it's a big question for our community because there is such awareness of agriculture and there are so many people who feel like they really make an effort to support their local farms and support local agriculture in their communities. But even with this really strong community, the reality is that the vast majority of people still don't really have a great opportunity to buy local food in their life. And so in a state, in a community like Maine, where we do have this incredible small and medium-sized farm community that is growing a lot of food, we're still really limited in how we can get that food to everybody. And so I think a lot of these things that you and I have been working on, Sarah, really are about how do we expand the awareness. And this is the awareness of people that I think really feel like they're already engaged in local food, but expand this idea that local food is really a right that everyone should have, and that we should have access to it, and it should be affordable, and we should all be able to feel like we can give a part of the money that we make as income, no matter how much that is, to our local food system, and feel like we're getting something nourishing back. And those wages that we share with the farmers are really making an impact and preserving the overall health of the community. So I think everything that Mafka does and what we're celebrating at the fair and what's so exciting about it is that connection. But what we really need to keep working on is expanding that community, expanding that access to local food, pushing back against the limitations of a market system that ultimately is not very inviting to farms, is not very inviting to people who have limited income, but at the same time are really interested in good, nutritious food. And so there's a lot of work to be done, tons to celebrate. And I'm so happy to be a part of this incredible community. But I think there's a lot of work that we also still need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And yes, lots to celebrate as well. I'm curious if there's anything in particular that is giving you hope or bringing you joy in our food and farming system.
Yeah, I've been farming here in Maine for going on 30 years. And I like to say that the best crop I've ever made is my kids, who really grew up here on the farm. They're both entering young adulthood. And of all of the things built here on the farm and the connections that we made, the fact that my kids got to grow up in this environment and really have a deep understanding of food and community, that's one of the things I'm most proud of everything.
Well, my last question for you, Seth, as a new co-host of Common Ground Radio, are there any particular topics or stories that you're really excited to explore further and share with our audience?
There's a couple of things. I've been on the board for Maka for the last 4 years, and I've really discovered a lot about that the organization does and communities that it touches that I wasn't aware with, just being a certified grower for so many years. And so I have a really great interest in exploring food communities in Maine that I don't personally have a lot of familiarity with and sharing that with other people. And then continuing on with helping expand the awareness of both the positives and the real challenges of our local food system. So food access issues, everything from farmers markets all the way down to food banks and how people actually interface with food. So those kind of things, and celebrating all of the really interesting and unique parts of it, and just talking about where we can make improvements and make it better for everybody.
Well, I'm really excited to work with you in this new phase as a co-host of Common Ground Radio and excited to see what stories we get to share.
Yeah, thank you. Me too.
Thank you all for joining me in this conversation, and I'm really looking forward to having you as fellow co-hosts on Common Ground Radio.
Thank you so much, Holly. We're excited to join, and I think there's so much that we can learn from each other and share with our audience.
Yes, thank you so much. I learned something from each of you, which was wonderful, and I look forward to being able to do that with other guests in the future.
This has been Common Ground Radio, which airs on the second Thursday of each month at 4 p.m. on WERU Community Radio. Archives of previous episodes can be found on weru.org as well as the WERU app. Stay tuned for more great programming.